And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
About 5 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Sunday, August 28th, 2016. This is the WGN Radio Theater, program 108 in the series. To my right, the vivacious Lisa Wolf. To my center, we have Mike Gastella, our executive producer. Hey, Mike. And then in the booth, Elif Garris. She is our producer. And we have three classic radio shows for you this evening, all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We play classic radio shows here on the WGN Radio Theater. It's just what we do, and we're not going to change it, Lisa.
That's what
we do.
It's
working so far.
Right.
We have The Halls of Ivy, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. Then we're going to tune into Broadway Is My Beat, starring Larry Thor, and then Dimension X with No Contact. You won't want to miss that. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actress stars as Sister Mary in the upcoming TV series The Young Pope, a drama that centers on a manipulative pope determined to upset the establishment.
Wow, you did that without making any mistakes. That's a tough word. A lot of syllables.
A lot of P's in there.
Yeah.
And if you guess correctly, you will win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best and my very favorite deep dish pizza.
The number of the call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You'll hear her opposite Woody Allen in this clip.
Hey, don't squish it, and after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
Darling, I've been killing spiders since I was 30, okay?
312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Give us a call. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is show 108 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop, and let's play that movie clip one more time.
Hey, don't squish it, and after it's dead, flush it down the toilet, okay? And flush it a couple of times.
Darling, I've been killing spiders since I was 30, okay?
Okay, we've got Chris on the line from Joliet. Hi, Chris.
How you doing?
Great, how are you?
Good.
Great. Do you recognize that actress?
That's Annie Hall herself, Diane Keaton.
You are right, Chris. You are a winner. You know what you won, a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Hope you're a pizza lover.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check out their menu online at loumalnatis.com. Chris, thank you again for listening and for calling in, and we hope you'll stay with us tonight.
All right, thank you.
And take care.
Thanks, Chris. All right, before we tune in to the Halls of Ivy, I want to welcome our sponsor to the show, Dan Jaffe, and also Dave Weiske. Dan Jaffe is the CEO of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter, and Dave Weiske is the Vice President of Customer Success. And they're here to talk a little bit about Cat's Pride. Also, we're going to give away another year's supply of Cat's Pride Kitty Litter to one of our lucky winners, or one of our lucky listeners, I should say. Dan and Dave, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Carl. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit more about Cat's Pride and why our listeners, if they're not already using Cat's Pride Ultimate Care Fresh and Light, why they should be switching.
I'm going to give them three great reasons. Number one is always performance. Odor control, absorbency, clump strength, low dust, no tracking. That's the number one reason. Is it really is the best performing litter, and it's lightweight. The second reason is it helps end the needless suffering of companion animals. Every purchase, we make a donation to the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which is Emmy Award-winning actress Katherine Heigl's foundation. She's very passionate about ending the needless suffering of companion animals, and we're happy to support her foundation as she is the spokeswoman for Cat's Pride. And the third reason is it's really great for the environment because it is lightweight. We can get twice as many units on a truckload, which means we cut the carbon footprint in half. And so you get performance, you get to do something great for companion animals, and you get to do something great for the environment.
Dan, if some of our listeners who have cats are thinking about switching to Cat's Pride and have some concerns about the correct way to switch litters, how does that work?
So the correct way to switch is take your competitive litter and throw it out and then just pour ours in the tray.
There you go. Then no problem there. I just wanted to be clear because I know some people have concerns, and if there aren't any, there aren't any.
No. I mean, ours is a 100% clay-based, which is what the best cat litters are. They're all a natural mineral, and so the cats naturally take to it. Cats are desert animals. But if you're at all worried that your cat is somehow going to reject it or is so attached to your existing litter that you want to introduce it to them in phases, you blend it in half and half for a couple of weeks, and then you can make the move fully to Cat's Pride. But really, you should see 100% cat acceptance. It's an all-natural mineral.
Before we bring Dave in and before we give another year's supply of kitty litter away, we have a late-breaking news real quick. We just got to go up to Bob.
Hey, yeah,
Bob.
There's an apparent evacuation at Los Angeles International Airport, LAX. There's some kind of security situation. We don't have a lot of information on it right now. Lester Holt, of course, from NBC News, tweeting that he's actually on a flight when people were pouring out of Terminal 4 onto the tarmac, security saying, shots fired, run. Lester Holt now in a vehicle on taxiway. So he tweeted about it, but we don't have much else other than that it's a security situation. Some parts or portions of Los Angeles International Airport are being evacuated right now. I'll have more information on it as soon as we get it.
Okay, we'll keep an ear on that. Thanks, Bob. Appreciate that. Dave, let's talk with you for a second about where people can find Cat's Pride kitty litter, especially the Fresh and Light Ultimate Care.
Sure. So we're in Walmart, Kroger, Meijer, Bilo, Dumoulis, which is Market Basket in the Northeast. We're in almost everywhere. But I think one of the cool things is when you talk about education of the cat litter, Amazon.com, we have a lot of reviews. And I encourage anybody to go on out there and look and see why people are switching. It's pretty outstanding to see the momentum that we've got there, as well as Chewy.com. So for the e-commerce, if you don't have time to go to the store and you don't want to haul the litter around, they ship it for free. That's the fine members.
That's great. You know, and the this whole thing with the carbon footprint, which is so great because, you guys sort of were the first to do this, you know, to make this the same amount of uses in a bag that weighs half the amount. So when you buy Cat's Pride, Ultimate Care, Fresh and Light, you're getting the exact number of uses in a bag that weighs half the amount. So that means when you're carrying these, which are normally very heavy bags, from the store to your car and from your car into your home, it saves you muscle strain, number one. But it also helps the environment because you touched upon it a little earlier, Dan, but if you could just explain a little more about how that is helping with all of the trucks across the country and how much impact that is.
Yeah, no, I'd love to. Cat litter weighs out a truck. It doesn't cube it out. If you think of like toilet paper or paper towel, it would fill that 40-whatever-foot van with no more airspace before it hits 44,000 pounds. That's the DOT's regulation. So cat litter, we're usually shipping about half air because we hit 44,000 pounds. Now, because it's 50% lighter per jug, so what used to be a 20-pound jug is now a 10-pound jug, you can put twice as many units on the truck before you hit 44,000 pounds. That means we cut the number of trucks in half off the road. And so that cuts the carbon footprint in half.
Right. Gas, saving gas and all of that, you know, pollution.
And just this year, we eliminated over 100,000 gallons of diesel just with what we've been doing with Cat's Pride.
Fantastic.
I did want to touch on one thing. You mentioned uses, and if you think about liquid detergent where they tell you how many loads you do, we are now putting an icon on all of our packaging, which says 35/140. What that is that you get 35 days worth of clumps. There's 140 clumps. The average cat goes four times a day. So obviously, that gives you an idea of how long it's useful for. And that's important because some of our competitors, to get light, have actually taken away the active ingredient and just put in a filler. So instead of 35, 140, theirs are literally 16, 64. So you'd have to buy twice as much just to get the same use.
Right.
So we're really trying to make this an industry standard and make everybody put on that jug. How many clumps are you really getting?
Right. So you should be switching, folks. Whatever kitty litter you're using, switch it to Cat's Pride Ultimate Care, Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. It's the best kitty litter for all the reasons we just talked about. Thank you, Dan and Dave. All right. It's time now to find a lucky one of our winners who's going to win, listeners who's going to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter.
Can I get a drum roll?
Here it is.
Dan picking up the name.
And the winner is Ken Bolt. From Portage, Indiana. His cat is Bells. Again, Ken Bolt, B-U-L-T. I hope I'm saying it right. From Portage, Indiana, and his cat, Bells.
Very good. All right, so if you go to our website, you can see what Cat's Pride kitty litter looks like. It's in the green jug. Of course, you can go to the Cat's Pride website, which is it just catspride.com?
Correct.
Check out the website. And there's also a club you can join, too, there. If you go to Cat's Pride website, there's a club. You can get coupons. This is a great company, folks, and it's based right here in Chicago. And Dan Jaffe, the CEO, is a great guy, and you should definitely switch, and so are you, Dave. You're both great guys. And thanks for sponsoring our show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, and we love our association with the WGN Radio Theater.
Thank you so much. All right, let's tune into our first classic radio show. It's The Halls of Ivy. Ronald and Benita Coleman were the stars, and this particular episode is called Fighting Med Student. Let's go back to May 24th, 1950, part one now of The Halls of Ivy.
Gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, presents the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. Welcome again to Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. When a college student with a flair for literature or economics graduates into a high-salaried position which utilizes his natural talents, he's honored and acclaimed. But when a college athlete, endowed with swift coordination and physical stamina, graduates into professional sports for a large annual stipend, it is somehow considered degrading. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy College, is discussing this very subject with his wife, Victoria, formerly of the London Theater.
I suppose it's a matter of professional life expectancy.
What is, Toddy?
This thing of college athletes going in for professional football or boxing or tennis to make a living after graduation. Why shouldn't they? They're fitted for it by nature, they're trained for it. And they can make far more money at it than they could by wearing gold footballs on their watch chains and being charming to prospects in a broker's office.
I couldn't agree with you more, dear, so who are you arguing with? I mean, excuse me, with whom are you arguing?
Myself.
Oh.
I often have these intra-hall debates. They're sparsely attended and often quite dull, but I find them helpful sometimes in clarifying an issue. I take both the affirmative and the negative sides, of course.
Do you just think up these debates for the mental exercise, which you need like Mr. Heinz needs a pickle?
No, Vicky, this subject came up today in a four-man discussion. Mr. Merriweather, Mr. Wellman, Professor Heaslip, and myself. As usual, it was Merriweather and I against the others.
Life would lose a great deal of charm, wouldn't it, if Mr. Wellman became suddenly fond of you?
Yes, it would indeed, my darling. Our mutual dislike is extremely stimulating. Though I must admit my position is not very exclusive. He dislikes almost everyone. Unless they have $1 million, of course, and are named Wellman. preferably Clarence Wellman.
He's a snob. To him, America's not a melting pot. It's a chafing dish.
Exactly. he's a snob with a capital dollar sign, if I may phrase a coin.
Very good.
I'm getting to be not only a debater, but a comedian as well. I see new vistas opening before me. Lecture tours. Dr. William Hall, 2 hours of fun and philosophy. Then radio, television. Would you care for my autograph, madam?
No, thank you, Jack Benny.
Benny, I've heard that name somewhere.
But, sir, I'm still interested in what started the discussion about college athletes going professional.
Oh, yes. Well, we were standing in front of the administration building.
Here's a telephone, dear. Toddy? The telephone, it's ringing.
I know, but where is it? You listen that way, and I'll listen this way. Next time it rings...
I got it!
Good. Someday I'll take the scissors to that long extension cord and whack it off about 50 feet so we could...
Dr. Hall's residence, yes. Who's calling, please? Oh, just a moment, I'll see. Toddy, it's Mr. Packard, Jeff Packard.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Dr. Hall speaking, Mr. Packard. Yes, you certainly may. Yes, I thought that was it. The matter was under discussion this afternoon. In 10 minutes, that'll be fine. Goodbye.
Is someone coming, Toddy? Shall I fix some tea?
Oh, not necessary, I think. I doubt if Mr. Packard is the tea-drinking type. He's a prizefighter promoter.
Yes, I know. I know his name.
Vicky, my sweet. The manner in which your theatrical profession impinges on certain other professions is a constant source of amazement to me. Hutchins of Chicago may be just a rumor to you, but let someone drop the name of any individual who has ever appeared on stage, platform, ring, or soapbox, and immediately you have his life history at your fingertips. It's marvelous.
No. It's all show business, Toddy. I still read Variety on the stage like you read the Yale Review. Anything that's box office, I've usually heard of it at least. And Mr. Packard means box office.
I suppose you'd like to know what he wants to see me about?
Yes.
But you're not going to ask?
No.
Will you marry me?
I did.
You know, well, one can't be married too often to a woman as discreet as you, one who has her feminine curiosity under such magnificent control. Ah, you're a wonderful girl, Vicky. You're a beautiful girl. And you have been a very good girl, so I'll tell you what Mr. Packard wants.
Good. It saves me from beating my head against the wall and screaming with frustration. But what does he want?
He wants me to help him persuade young Ryan to sign with him after graduation.
Terry Ryan? Isn't he studying medicine?
Yes, and Dr. Davis says he's the best in his class. He was under debate earlier today in front of the administration building. Subject... Should a superlatively endowed college athlete capitalize on his publicity and prowess after graduation? Mr. Wellman and Professor Heaslip, negative. Meriwether and Hall, affirmative.
You mean you were in favor of his dropping medicine for professional prize fighting?
My dear girl, professional prize fighting is a redundant expression. Prize fighting is per se professional. It is for a prize, a wager, or a stake. Therefore, an amateur status is automatically ruled out.
Quibble with me, Doctor. You were in favor of Terry Ryan giving up medicine for prize fighting?
I didn't say that. Mr. Wellman merely happened to be on the other side of the debate, and naturally I had to oppose him. No. My personal convictions had nothing to do with it.
What are your personal convictions?
Vicky, I'm one of those unfortunate individuals who are either cursed or blessed, as the case may be, with the ability to see things from the other fellow's viewpoint.
Well, but for goodness sakes, Toddy, if he has real skill in medicine...
Oh, yes, I know what you're going to say, and in the absence of Mr. Wellman, I agree with you. However, Ryan is a natural boxer. Fast, crafty, tough, intelligent. That's why he's intercollegiate champion. And it's quite possible that with proper handling, he can make $1 million within a very few years. As a doctor, even a very successful doctor... He can hardly do that in 20 years.
No, but money isn't everything.
Well, the answer to that remark is, what ain't it?
I, I still don't know exactly where you stand, William. And if Terry Ryan is as shifty with his hands as you are with rhetoric, he'll make 12 million.
Well, my position is very clear, Vicky. I want the boy to go on with medicine.
Good.
On the other hand, who am I to talk a young man out of acquiring a fortune? Must I recommend that he hang up his shingle and sit in his office reading his National Geographics, waiting for a $5 case of mumps or chickenpox?
All righty, let's take a break here on the Halls of Ivy from May 24th, 1950, with Fighting Med Student with Ronald and Benita Coleman. Let's take a break, then it's more. Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate that. Thank you, Esmeralda. And we're here till 2 o'clock in the morning. This reminds me of like one of those detective shows from the 80s, like Magnum P.I. or one of those great, you know, Spencer for Hire or Vegas. Remember Vegas with Robert Urich? Remember that show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think we should go back to those days and watch those shows today. I think we can watch some of those on MeTV.
Yeah,
and Antenna TV.
You don't
TV.
Have copies of those on your beta tapes at home?
On my, on my VHS beta. Yeah, you know, it's funny you should mention that. Isn't it kind of crazy that back then, back in the, 70s, 80s, they had the format VHS. Then they decided, hey, let's create another format to drive everybody crazy. It's exactly the same thing, just a smaller version of it, right? And I, at the time, had a video store in the 80s. This is before Blockbuster Video.
What did you sell at the video store?
Well, I had VHS. What did I sell? VHS. I rented the VHS, you know. And I remember then they were like, well, you got to carry beta now, too. What a pain in the neck that
so
was.
Did you?
Yeah. About every 10 persons that came in, one wanted a beta. It was still much more VHS over beta, you know.
That's good to know.
Although the beta format did have better quality,
did
actually.
It?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Did you beta test it? That's my first corny joke of the night.
There's number one for you.
There's going to be more, believe me. All right, let's get back to this. The Halls of Ivy from May 24th, 1950 with Ronald and Benita Coleman.
Oh, I'm not possessed of such omniscience.
I guess that's Mr. Packard. Now, I'll let him in and then leave.
I want you to stay, if you will. In the heat of an argument, I have but to look at you, and sweet, cool reason takes over.
Well, thank you. In that case, I'll hang around with the boys.
Ah, what a Solomon a college president is expected to be. But when I consider that the best use the world has found for sage assistance is to flavor the stuffing in a turkey, well, all I can say
is... This way, Mr. Packard. William, Mr. Packard is here.
Oh, good day, Mr. Packard. I assume my wife has already introduced herself.
Oh, she didn't have to, Doc. She did a show in New York and London named Give Them Tears. I had 10 seats for every night during both runs. Miss Cromwell... Mrs. Hall, you were terrific.
Well, thank you, Mr. Packard. It was a very good play. And thank you also for contributing to its financial success.
Well, not at all. It was mostly deductible anyway. Entertaining clients.
Will you sit down, Mr. Packard?
Well, thanks. Mind a cigar, Mrs. Hall?
The kind you probably smoke not at all.
Oh, you're safe. Made for me in Havana, $1.25 apiece.
And probably rolled by Carmen herself.
Oh... Escamillo made her quit before my time, Doc.
Ah, you see, Toddy, the theater isn't so far from the ringside.
I see. You wanted to talk to me about young Ryan, Mr. Packard.
Yes. You'll excuse a little shop talk, Mrs. Hall?
Oh, I love shop talk. Go right ahead.
Okay. Well, here's the deal, Doc. Terry Ryan's the greatest natural fighter I've ever seen work, and I've seen them all. Dynamite in both hands, brains in his head, and tiger blood in his heart. Ever see him go?
Yes, Mr. Packard, I have.
Well, he probably made it look so easy you weren't impressed. But take it from a guy who's been handling all kinds of fighters, champions and palookas for 35 years. Ed Ryan's the class of them all. I can build him up. Give him the experience he needs. Teach him all the tricks in the book.
Tricks, Mr. Packard?
Well, not what you're thinking, Mrs. Hall. I don't mean healing or gouging or tossing Mickeys into the water bucket. I mean the legitimate tricks a professional has to know. Ring psychology, diet, timing. My fighters get their decisions in the ring, not in my office or in the back room of a nightclub.
Your reputation is in your favor, Mr. Baggett.
Well, that's what the Boxing Commission thinks, Doc, and they're a tough bunch of cookies to convince. Never mind that. What I'm trying to say is that I can make Terry Ryan world's champion in 2 years. You know what that means in the bank?
Well, I have a general idea. And then what do you want me to do? I know, but I'd prefer to have you tell me for the record.
On or off the record, I want you, if you will and can, to tell Ryan which way his best interests are. I got him wavering, but I just can't seem to score a knockout. He thinks I'm not a disinterested party. Believe me, he's right.
You know, of course, that Terry is studying medicine and stands very high in his class.
Mrs. Hall, I know more about that kid than he does. I know his sleeve length, 36 inches. How many fillings he's got? One gold and two porcelain. His kindergarten teacher's police record. $10 for slapping a cop. He likes his eggs, 3.5 minutes. He got that little scar on his left pinky from the first time he tried to use a scalpel. I know everything about him, including that he can be world's champion. You can see that I've done a lot of research on the boy, Amos Hall.
You certainly have.
I know, but is the objective good enough?
Oh, for me, there ain't a better one. Well, Doc, do I get your help, or do I have to do it without you?
Mr. Packard, I don't doubt that under your tutelage, Terry Ryan could become a champion and a millionaire.
Well, then?
Neither do I doubt, alternatively, that he could become a fine surgeon. Well, it comes down then to the question, which gloves would I recommend for this doubly talented young man? Leather or rubber? I believe that when God has endowed an individual with a genius, a knack, a special gift of any kind, that individual is obligated to use a certain portion of that gift for the good and welfare of his fellow man. To use one's talent for the sole purpose of self-advancement and self-enrichment is, to me, if not a sacrilege, at least a long stride up a blind alley. Does that answer your question, Mr. Packard?
That surround us here today.
It's somewhat later the same afternoon as we return to the halls of Ivy, just in time to hear Victoria say,
I called Terry Ryan, Toddy. He'll be over in a few minutes.
Thank you, dear. Did you tell him why?
No, but I imagine he can guess. Mr. Packard has been quite in evidence around the campus, you know, and he's not what you might call self-effacing.
No, he's a careful bull in a shop full of heavy china. Vicky, I sometimes wonder how far a man in my position should go in steering a young man's career in any particular direction.
But, darling, you're merely advising. You're not tricking him into anything.
I only wish there was some fairly decent way I could trick him into...
Toddy?
Yes, Victoria?
There's a gleam in your eye. It's the same one you get when we play canasta. When you're about to go out concealed with three naturals. What are you cooking up, Doctor?
My dear girl, to hear you talk, one would think that I habitually resort to animal cunning and shady practices. I assure you that whatever I might be contemplating, it would be purely a matter...
Not purely is good enough for me, dear. I had visions of you tampering with the steering gear of Mr. Packard's automobile. I'll let Terry Ryan in.
Vicky, keep him out there a moment, will you? Till I can make a phone call?
Oh, well, I haven't time to run upstairs and put my best eyelashes on, but I'll do what I can.
Hello, maintenance? It's Dr. Hall speaking. Let me speak to the head gardener, please. Hello, Albert. Dr. Hall, can you locate Beans Phillips quickly? Good. I want him to be trimming the hedge in front of the medical building at... let me see. At 3:40 exactly. Well, I don't care if it was trimmed today. Have him trim it again. I'll explain later. Thank you, Albert. And I might add that you have the grounds looking beautiful. 3:40 exactly. Right. Goodbye. Ah, Hall, you schemer, you plotter, you master of intrigue. You were born out of your time, you rascal. You talk of the Medicis and the Borgias.
William, yes, Terry Ryan.
Hello, Ryan. Glad to see you. Sit down, won't you?
Thank you, sir.
Vicky, don't go.
Well, I don't want to be in the way.
Oh, you're never in the way. And I think Mr. Ryan will agree that you lend a certain charm and distinction to any gathering.
Mr. Ryan agrees to that with a fast pulse and a recognition of the understatement of the week.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. And I must say, Terry, you don't talk at all like a pugilist.
Well, if Gene Tunney can love Shakespeare, I guess I can handle the dictionary. Doctor, is this about Jeff Packard?
In a way, yes. He's talked to you, I suppose.
He certainly has. Yeah. His hands on my shoulders and looking deeply into my eyes. He paints a very pretty picture.
Yeah, we know. He tried to sell it to us.
In a very rich frame.
Oh, sure. He's already got me taking my championship profits to the bank in an armored wheelbarrow.
As long as I was officially invited to this meeting, I'd like to ask a question, Terry. How do you feel about it?
Well, frankly, Mrs. Hall, I'm weakening. If you can call it weakening to walk into a chance for $1 million and a little piece of glory.
Terry, as an intelligent man, you have undoubtedly given this choice of professions a great deal of thought. A career in the ring with money, excitement, headlines and fame versus applauding respectability, establishing yourself in medicine and surgery.
That's about it, Doctor. And I know what your advice would be. Stay with medicine.
Yes, but of course I'm prejudiced. I'm a teacher. And have a respect amounting almost to reverence for the profession of medicine. Conversely, I view a prize-fighting career as a gamble. Oh, I know, in your case, the odds are with you. But to me, the good you can do with your rare gift for diagnosis and the surgical skill you've already evidenced far outweighs the rewards of a boxing championship.
Maybe this is treason, Terry, but what if you didn't get to be champion? In a few years, you'd have lost out in medicine and it would be too late to do anything about it.
Well, sure, there's that, of course, but I don't plan on staying with it. Packard says he can get me the championship in a few years. Well, if I get it, I'll retire from the ring, I mean. And then, back to medicine.
Do you think you'd come back, Terry? Wouldn't it be just one more bout? Just one more purse? Oh, mind you, I admit I'm arguing from a sense of excuse me. Dr. Hall's residence? Who? Ann Arbor, Michigan. Oh, yes, 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 indeed, yes.
Long distance chess game, Terry. He has them going all over the country.
Oh, I'm glad you told me. I'll put my first $10,000 in AT&T.
Hello. Yes, Rudy, I'm ready. A pawn to the king's bishop's four. That's right, yes. I'll call you back at this time 1 week from tonight. Collect. Will 1 week be enough for you, Rudy? Get some outside advice if you wish. I don't mind. Goodbye, Rudy. That was Professor Colstart at Michigan. If he loses this game and one more, he owes me a first edition of South Wind. Play chess, Terry?
No, little doctor. I'm not much on strategy, though. Anybody who can think four moves ahead is me, Pete.
And you don't think you'll meet any prize fighters who will think four moves ahead?
Well, the fighters don't do the thinking, Mrs. Hall. The managers do that. And I'd have Jeff Packard, and he's at least six moves ahead of every other promoter in the business. He's... Oh, I see you looking at your watch, Doctor. Have I overstayed?
Oh, no, not at all, Terry. It's just that I have an appointment with Dr. Chester Davis at four. Frankly, it's to talk about you.
I seem to be quite a fascinating topic these days. Tell me, is the future of one student worth all the discussion, Doctor?
I can answer that, Terry. Yes, it is, to my husband. He somehow doesn't think of the student body as a production line, you know, assemble them, move them along, and get rid of them. He seems to think they're people, individuals. The future of every student here at Ivy is the most important thing in his life. It is his life. And now I'd like to hear just a smattering of applause, because I haven't made a speech in a long time. Well, no applause from you, William.
When the flag goes by, my darling, one holds one's hat over one's heart in silence. You can't applaud with one hand. And like the passing flag, a simple truth requires just simple honor and respect.
Well, I retract the applause and take off my hat, Mrs. Hall.
Well, one tribute as good as another to me, I'm sure, gentlemen. But trained as I was, I have more confidence in a noisy reaction. if you're seeing Dr. Davis at four, Toddy, you better get going.
I think so, too. Come on, Terry, walk over with me, will you?
Hello. Doctor, seriously, don't you think it's possible for me to make a lot of money in the ring and then come back, finish studying medicine?
Possible, yes, but highly improbable.
Oh, why, sir?
Well, because procrastination is not only the thief of time, it's the murderer of ambition. I have it on good authority that you have a fighting heart. It's entirely up to you what you wanted to fight for. Yours is the... Oh, hello, Beans.
Hiya, Doc. Hey, what do you think of that, Al? But I clipped this hedge perfect this morning. Now he's got me clipping it again. He must be getting absent-minded or something. Huh?
No, I think he's just a perfectionist.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Beans, this is Terry Ryan, the intercollegiate boxing champion.
Glad to know you, Beans.
Yeah, well, likewise, kid. I seen you fight a couple of months ago. You're good. You take my advice, you go professional. Only, look.
Yeah?
Not so much with the left. It's great, see? But you got two hands, see? I'm a fighter myself, only I'm working here till they get me a good match. I'll wake out with you some morning. Then when I'm champion heavy, I'll bring you along, see?
Well, thanks a lot.
Now, that's very kind of you, Beans. Now, if you'll excuse us...
Wait a minute, Doctor, please. Beans, say, are you Beans Phillips that fought Abe Morton back in... a while ago?
Yeah, the same, kid. I'm going to get a rematch, too. I know what I need now when I get him into the ring.
But Morton died 6 years ago.
He did? Well, they'll get me a go with somebody else, then. You a fighter, kid? You got the built for it. Look, you meet me in a gym sometime. I'll give you a few tips.
That's a very good idea, Beans. But we're due at the medical building. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, I always do, Doc. That's why I like working outdoors like this. There's plenty of air. I'm keeping in shape for a match with Morton. I'll see you around, boy.
You bet. Oh, and Beans.
Yeah?
The next time you meet Morton, good luck.
Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. That's a nice kid, Doc. Bring him around again. I got to get back to work now. My muscles stiffen up. I keep moving. Always keep moving.
And that was all. We never got to the medical building. Ryan suddenly remembered an engagement and left. I called and apologized to Dr. Davis.
But, Toddy, you still don't know. I mean, if Terry's...
Oh, he's going on with medicine.
Did he say so?
Yes, but it wasn't necessary, my darling. If you could have seen his face when he realized that he was talking to Beans Phillips, one of the great fighters of yesterday, and realized also that this man with the broken hands and the scar tissue must have had a similar decision to make at one time, well, it was quite convincing.
It was also quite a coincidence your meeting poor old Beans that way, wasn't it?
Yes, wasn't it?
Was it?
No, dear, it wasn't.
That's what I thought. Well, congratulations, Doctor. A clean victory. Good generalship.
I'm glad it worked. As I have often remarked, all stratagems are not necessarily gems of strategy. I'm glad that horticulture has lost the decision to medicine.
Horticulture?
Gardening. Madison Square Gardening. Cauliflowers. And talking of cauliflowers, my darling, what's for dinner tonight?
I was curious. I tasted it. Now I know why Schlitz is the largest selling beer in America. No wonder it's the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
And now, here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
And good night, everyone.
Good night.
Be sure to see Ronald Coleman's latest picture, Champagne for Caesar. We'll be seeing you next week at this time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman. In our cast tonight, Sheldon Leonard played Beans Phillips, Ken Christie was Jeff Packard, and Stacey Harris was Terry Ryan. Ladies and gentlemen, the future has a way of sneaking up on all of us. But there is a way of accounting for the future in advance by a method of sure, automatic saving today. And there is no surer method of saving and saving with profit than through the purchase of United States savings bonds. Whatever your hope for the future, a home or business of your own, a college education for your children, it can be brought to reality by saving. Buy United States savings bonds today. Tonight's script was written by Don Quinn. Our music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. The Halls of Ivy was created by Don Quinn, directed by Nat Wolf, and presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the halls of ivy that surround us here today. And we will not forget.
Coming up, it's The Great Gildersleeve on NBC.
Good comedy episode of The Halls of Ivy from May 24th, 1950, starring Ronald and Benita Coleman. In that cast, you heard Sheldon Leonard. Sheldon Leonard was an actor and then became a big television producer, huge television producer, including I Spy was one of the shows, and then The Andy Griffith Show, Dick Van Dyke. He was just, he was really a mogul, a television mogul. And years ago, I had the great opportunity to interview him, and we'll play this interview here on WGN because I recorded it. But I'll never forget, I asked him, I said, you know, Sheldon, what's it like for you now? You're retired. What's a day in the life of Sheldon Leonard? And he said, well, I get up in the morning, I go to my mailbox, I get all my royalty checks and go to the bank and deposit them.
Not a bad day.
That's what he said. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa's playing the bongos here. Too bad people can't see you doing this, Lisa.
Yeah, I'm really good at this. I used to be in Blue Man Group when I was a little taller.
Blue Man Group with a female?
Yeah, that was me.
Are there females in the Blue Man Group?
There are not.
I didn't think so.
Except for me.
Those guys could use a hair club for men, couldn't they?
You have to be a certain height, too. There's a lot of restrictions. I think you have to be about 6 feet tall minimum.
And you have to be blue.
You have to be blue all over.
Right.
So it's difficult to find the actors.
You know,
the
I've
musicians.
Never been there. I've never seen
Blue Man Group?
Never have, no.
Well, why not?
I don't leave my house
icon.
Usually.
I just stayed home and twiddle my thumbs and listen to radio.
There is so much great television out there now.
Yeah, but there's so much more than television
know,
out there right
but,
now.
You know, part of the thing is I have a nice big screen TV, right? And I have Netflix on there and HBO.
Yeah, it does not replace live theater. It just doesn't.
Nah.
Yeah. Tuesday, I'm going to see Kinky Boots. It's a lot of fun.
Who?
Kinky Boots.
What's that?
It's at the Oriental Theater. It's a Broadway in Chicago series
show.
Oh,
my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. You ever heard of Kinky Boots?
No.
Oh, it went to Broadway.
No.
Yeah.
Broadway, okay. Lisa knows all about this stuff.
All right. Well, if you're at Kinky Boots,
when you
Tuesday,
were in New
I'll
York, did
there.
You see Hamilton?
No, it's coming to Chicago the end of September.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm waiting for
Might
a year.
Have to not see that, too.
Well,
for me.
It won't be the same cast, unfortunately.
Actually, when I go to New York, I generally do take in a Broadway experience. I generally do.
You didn't the last few times.
No, because I'm getting older now, and it's
right.
Sort of like I'm getting.
Well, I almost saw Amy Schumer when I was in New York
grumpier.
Last time.
I get grumpier as I get older.
I've noticed that.
You know?
I almost saw Amy Schumer last time I was in New York. She just wasn't there. I just happened to buy a ticket for a show that did not exist.
Lisa got conned out of, what, $40?
I don't know.
$80?
She wasn't there, and I paid for a ticket and went over there. The guy was probably laughing at me all the way.
Probably.
Probably.
What are you going to do? You live and learn.
Yes.
Lisa.
I have.
Right, in this hour, we're going to tune into the great detective series, Broadway Is My Beat. You won't want to miss that. And then in hour three, it's Dimension X here on program 108 of the WGN Radio Theater, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Lady Dynamite, about a stand-up comedian who moves back to L.A. after recovering from a bipolar disorder.
Sounds funny.
Does,
Lady
right?
Lady Dynamite. Yep. I like the title.
Yep, I do too. And I like the actress. And if you
She's
can recognize this actress, you will win a $25 gift certificate for Lumel Nadi.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She was the actress that spoofed Celine Dion on Saturday Night Live all the time.
Thank you, everybody in the house! And welcome to my show! I am Celine Dion, and I am the best singer in the world!
Who is that actress? Call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop here on WGN Radio Theater. Let's play that movie clip again.
I am Celine Dion, and I am the best singer in the world.
Okay, that is a great clip. We've got Bill on the line from Deerfield. Hi, Bill.
Hi, everybody. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Perfect.
Great, great. Who's that actress?
That is Anna Gasteyer.
Anna Gasteyer is right, and you are a winner. We're so happy to give you a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. We hope that you'll love that. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnatis.com. Bill, thanks so much for listening in and for calling in.
Thank you all so much.
Take care.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it. Enjoy the pizza.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think everybody's going to enjoy this episode of Broadway Is My Beat. It was originally broadcast on radio back in the 1950s, actually started in 1949, then lasted to 1954. It was a detective series, and the detective was Danny Clover. He was a detective as Times Square. He prowled the Times Square area, Lisa. And this was in a time, you know, when Times Square was pretty dangerous. I mean, now it's not. They've remodeled it all. It's all great. But back then, it was the most violent, the gaudiest, the lonesomest mile in the world, Times Square to Columbus Circle. And Larry Thor played Detective Danny Clover on this, and Charles Calvert was Sergeant Gino Tartaglia, and Jack Crucian was Sergeant Mugovan. These were the three detectives that were the main detectives on Broadway, as my beat. I think you'll like this. May 5th, 1951, called the Harry Foster Case. Let's tune it in. Part one of Broadway Is My Beat.
Broadway's My Beat, from Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat, with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
In the early twilight, Broadway is dappled with beginning shadows. It's the time of the small shock. The springtime's day starts its long scream down into night. It's time clock time, the hour for going home again. Close the ledger, lock the store, figure the overtime, smile at the boss, and out into the street. Blink, then run. The subway waits for no man. Home again. End another day again. But my day was just beginning, north on Broadway into the east, Central Park around the 80s, and pushed through the crowd whose focus was a park bench that faced the street. And Sergeant Mugovan tells you why you're there.
Right over here, Danny. Land right there near the bench.
I found the knife. I didn't pick it up.
Who's the boy?
Paul
Gilbert. Yeah. I haven't been home from school yet.
Oh, you'll go home in a squad car, Paul.
I promised him with the siren, Danny.
Yeah, with the siren. What happened, Paul? How did the knife get there?
I saw the man take it out of his own back and throw it down. And then the man staggered away.
Mm-hmm. Did I show you this, Danny? All this blood? Wherever he is, he's hurt real bad.
I want you to think for a minute, Paul. What did this man look like?
tall, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's all. He was tall.
Most grown-ups are tall, aren't they, Paul?
All of them, except for midgets.
One more thing, Paul. Was there anyone with this man? Think hard.
No, I don't think so.
Well, you told me that
the other man I saw wasn't with him. The other man in the hat just watched him. Then the man in the hat ran away. He wasn't with him.
What did the man in the hat look like?
He had a hat. That's all I know. I got scared. I ran.
That's right, Danny. Paul ran right into Officer Curcio on the beat. Almost knocked him down. Curcio came back, saw the blood on the bench, the knife, phoned it in.
Paul, did you know the man with the knife?
No, I usually don't come home from school this way. We had an after-school game with the 8B2 over there on the playground. This is the first game of the intramural.
A squad car, Muggerman, for Paul, with a siren. Then the careful tracing, the sifting through the shadows of a city, the dust of a city, the hiding places of a city into which a wounded man must crawl and lie for a time and then wander in search of a kindlier place, a darker place, and leave behind him the trail of the wounded, the blood of his life. But the man who'd been stabbed had done none of these things. The hospitals told me that, the doctors, the fellow in the neat white jacket in the drugstore across from the park, who, not having a wounded man, offered me a special on shaving cream. Then the legwork of the man on the beat, harvesting the crop of those who had been at the scene of the crime, sorting them, packaging them, parceling them out to me, one by one.
Look, mister, how many rights do we have to give you guys? I was calling on my girl. I brought her a box of chocolate-covered peppermints. She was beginning to understand me.
Oh, we won't keep you long.
You don't understand, mister. I don't stick close to my little bird. She busts out of her cage. I've known her to do that when I pop out 2 minutes for a corner newspaper.
You were in the park this afternoon, saw a man who was stabbed. Can you describe the man?
I was never in no park where an unfortunate got stabbed.
An officer took your name. You made him erase it, start all over again because he wasn't spelling it right.
So you caught me in a lie.
Can you describe the man who was hurt?
Describe? Who got a chance to get close to him? Everybody pushing, shoving like it was a parade for a general. I'm lucky I got a peek at the top of his fleeing skull.
Well, that's all.
Look, I want to explain why I lied about not being in the park. My girl, the bird, thinks I work for a living. It's a little white lie I used to keep her cage.
That's all. You can go. Then the man who is eager, whose eyes dart and pierce, who follows you as you move away from him, stays close to you, needs the lapel of your coat.
I was real close to him. He had a knife in his back. He breathed in my face. I could tell you the color of his eyes, how close I was.
Tell me.
Blue eyes. Washed out blue, and no tears in them. No tears at all. No remorse for the evil doing that had brought wrath upon him.
Blue eyes. What color hair?
Dirty. A dirty color. All matted. No, it was blonde and shining. And it was a kind of light that shone about it. That's because he was dying. Dying in protest against all the wickedness that'll drown. Drown us all.
A big man, a short man, a...
What does it matter how he looked? I was close to him, I tell you. He reached out his hand to me, touched my hand. Tears on my face.
Help him out of your office. Motion a policeman over. Watch him be gentle with the man. Take him away. And then motion for the next one to come in.
Realize, of course, that you're imposing on my time. Not that I mind. It could be a welcome relief from those spoiled monsters I simper and smile at in diaper.
You're a nursemaid, Miss Cram, is that right?
Call me governess, and call me Virginia. Miss Cram doesn't sound like me at all, don't you think?
You take the children to the park every day?
4 to 5:30, except on rainy days. Hmm? On rainy days, the children and I stay at home, and I'm permitted callers from 4 to 5:30. That's on rainy days.
You told an officer you saw the man who was hurt.
I was making conversation. I needed that to get those brats out of my hair.
You didn't see him?
I wouldn't have gone near him. But I can tell you who did see him, the looker.
Who?
The looker. All of us in the park know her. She sits in a window across the street on the 5th floor, watches every move we make every day. Sits there and watches. It makes you feel as if you're being spied on, know what I mean?
5th floor, in an apartment on 80th and 5th.
Well, you can't miss her. Just stand out in the street for a while. Her eyes will bore right through you. But on a rainy day...
I know, you're permitted callers. That's all, Miss Kerr.
I'm Danny Clover, police.
We haven't done anything.
I know. I don't even know who you are. There's no name card on your door.
You want to come in and talk to us?
All right.
I'm George Mason. She's my... in the wheelchair. Diane's my wife.
Good evening, Miss Mason.
Diane? Diane, dear. Diane, we've got a visitor. He said good evening to you. Say hello, Diane. This is Mr. Clover. He's from the police.
Mr. Mason, there was some trouble earlier across the street from...
Talk to her. You know, I'm trying something. Maybe it'll do her some good, talking to her. No one ever does, you know. You just talk to her and I'll answer you.
All right. There was a man stabbed across the street from you, Mrs. Mason, in the park.
Yes, I heard about it when I came home. Have you found the man?
No. Mrs. Mason, I understand that you sit by a window every day.
That's right, that one. She sits there, watches. It's her pleasure.
Today?
Every day.
Then she must have seen what happened. She must
pretty,
have...
Pretty. Pretty.
What?
What are you trying to say, Diane? Can't you see how it is?
I'm sorry.
George?
Yes. What is it?
I saw a man today. I saw a knife today.
Is there anything you can do? Can you talk to her?
Diane.
A man today. A knife today.
Yes, well, can you tell me what the man looked like, sweetheart?
Knife.
Was he a big man? Was he a small man? Was he a nice man?
Man.
Did you like him?
And try to erase from memory the eyes of the woman filled with the named terrors, the known terrors that dart and scurry, gnaw and nibble at the fleeting instants of serenity within her. And try to wash away in the city's night screaming the crooning of a tuneless song, and suddenly the known words, a man, a knife. And know that the eyes that absorb all movement, all shadow, all light on faces, and things that pass before them, have seen nothing. Not the man who was stabbed, not the one who did the stabbing. And then the long walk to the darkened room, turn on the shaded light bulb, and search the cupboards for sleep. And finally, it comes. In the morning, the scorching cup of coffee, the walk to headquarters, and the cheery greeting on the threshold from the cheery Sergeant Attaglia.
Welcome, Danny. Welcome to your abode away from your abode.
Good morning, Gino.
The best. The sunniest, the bravest.
Not so early, Gino. All I've had is a cup of coffee.
For which I am delighted.
Huh?
For which I am delighted. Come, I will escort you to your office, Danny. You will see there how I have taken the liberty to spread upon your desk a repast.
I shouldn't have done it, Gino.
A repast consisting of a hot paper container of coffee and a half a dozen cinnamon buns. Voila. The repast. Partake.
Looks good.
How else should they look? The cinnamon buns were baked in the oven of Mrs. Tartaglia with her own two lily whites. Go ahead, partake. Munch if you like.
Delicious. Thank Mrs. Tartaglia for me.
Goes without saying. And now to the events of the morning. Okay if I disturb while you munch?
Yeah.
We of the department have discovered that this park bench upon which an alleged man was allegedly stabbed has been a lucky bench. Or unlucky, depending, of course, on the point of view of whom sat there.
You'll explain it to me, Gino.
Goes without saying. The lucky part of the bench is that 5 weeks ago, a man found upon it, wrapped in a newspaper, $300. Turned it over to Lost and Found.
So?
So is that 4 weeks ago, same man turned into Lost and Found from the same bench a like newspaper containing another 300. And we have not seen this pleasant, honest citizen since.
Do you have his name?
Oh, it goes without... Harry Forster, 1345 West 16th. Want I should keep the cinnamon buns hot for you, Danny?
Oh, do that, Gino. You go ahead and do that.
Please help me. Please
please come in and help me.
What's the matter?
My husband. No one will help me. I asked the neighbors. They said, call the police. Call an ambulance. Please, help.
Where is he?
You'll help. He's in our bedroom. I think he's dying, and no one...
You know Mrs. Foster?
Yes, Harry's wife. He came home last night, and there was blood. He just looked at me like an animal, and... There he is, mister. Help him. Please help him.
Dead.
No. No, you're wrong.
He's been dead for a long time.
He was asleep. Only asleep.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
All right, that's the first portion of Broadway Is My Beat with the Harry Foster case, starring Larry Thor. We'll get back to it in just a moment. Let's take a quick break. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Esmeralda. 12:37 on a Monday. You see how we're here 3 days? We're here Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, Lisa.
Yeah, I think we should be paid for 3 days then, huh?
It's kind of weird, Bob. You know that? We're on the air 6 hours, yet we're here Saturday, Sunday,
straddle,
and Monday.
Yes.
It's kind of kooky. I can't get my mind around it. It's like a mind bender.
Think about that one.
It's a mind bender when you think about it, yeah. So Lisa will have to explain that to me. Because she's much smarter than I am.
Not on classic radio. Not even close.
Where I took up space in college, Lisa has like 14, 15 master's degrees. How many?
No, but I didn't learn about classic radio in college. So
maybe you
this
can...
This is a learning
time,
process.
Time-space continuum. Maybe you can explain to me how that is that we're here 3 days when we only are on the air 6 hours.
Take out my physics book. I'll see what I can do.
Figure it out. And talk with Einstein. That would help a lot. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to him? Can you go back in your time machine to a time when you used to be nice to me and see if you can hook
what?
Up with him?
Are you crazy? I am so nice to you.
Right.
All of the time.
Well, you did bring me a cake.
I brought you an
you
apple.
And Elif got me an ice cream cake roll.
I brought you an apple.
Thank you. That
You're
was
welcome. An ice cream cake roll.
That was good.
It was good.
Very good. Yes. Thanks, Lisa. You have a birthday coming up.
I believe mine would be next.
I think it's in October, right? Is it?
It is.
Do I have
in
the
October.
Month right? Is it,
it is.
The 17th?
It's not. No.
Oh, man.
We'll have to keep working on
14th?
That. 14th? We'll have to keep working
it's
on
coming
that.
Up. I know
it's
that.
It's coming up.
All right. Well, you know what's coming up now?
I sure do.
The conclusion to Broadway Is My Beat. This is called the Harry Foster case. And here is Larry Thor. The conclusion now, Broadway Is My Beat.
In the Maytime, the sun grins down and pats Broadway's cheek. Broadway loves it. The sunlit minutes are added to the 10-minute break for a cigarette. The walk is slower, the sway gentler. The windows are opened wide, and the doors, too. And glints of sunlight are carried through long hallways in the sigh of a summer's wind, touching the lips of the girl at the typewriter, touching the hand of the man at the water cooler watching her, touching the steel of the file cabinets, warming them. And having made the tour, back onto Broadway and start all over again. But where I was, there was no warmth. Only a woman drawing a shawl tight around her shoulders and talking quietly to her dead.
Harry, listen to me. You were right. We should have told them. We should have told them all about it. And you wouldn't be like this, and I wouldn't.
Mrs. Foster, what should you have told us?
What? What did you say?
What should you and your husband have told us?
About the money, nothing else.
The money he found on the park bench?
Yes. You see, we should have told them, Harry.
But he did, Mrs. Foster. He reported it. Turned it in.
You don't understand. I knew no one would understand.
Then maybe you can help me.
Friday was always Harry's day off. From the factory out there, you can see it from here, see? On his day off, I'd pack him a little lunch, and he'd kiss me goodbye. Walk uptown to Central Park.
Gone.
He always went alone. We always sat on the same bench. Harry used to describe it to me. What he saw, people he talked to. Felt as if I'd been there with him.
And one day he found money in a newspaper.
And turned it in, like you said. The next week turned it in. But after that, I told him he didn't have to do that anymore.
You mean he found more money? Is that what you're trying to tell me? You mean he found more money?
For 5 weeks in a row. I told Harry he didn't have to turn it in anymore. I told him to go back. To be sure and keep going back. Every week. Yesterday, too. We'd be rich. No more of this. No more factory.
Why didn't you call us when he came home hurt? Call a doctor?
It would have spoiled it, ended it. The money, don't you see? I thought he'd live, and we... with that money... No. You couldn't. You couldn't see.
Then she turned from me and walked over to the window, stared out of it. Across her shoulder, into the noon sunshine, I could see the factory emptying its lunchtime employees, the crowd breaking off its fragments, to the curb with the lunch pails, to the push carts for the ham and white and coffee. Then the other sound, the feet in the doorway, the entrance of the professionals, coroner, photographer, reporter. The man had been murdered. I left. Then back again to Central Park and the park bench of the stabbing. Sit on it. A man named Harry Foster used to find money here, and he was killed. And a woman who had seen it happen, a woman who sat at a window every day. I looked up to the window. She wasn't there. I wondered why. I knew why. She was in the wheelchair. There was a man pushing it carefully down the steps.
Can you scooch a little to the side, friend?
Need a hand?
Yeah, if you want. Thanks.
How are you feeling, Mrs. Mason?
She ain't gonna answer you.
I didn't know she left the house.
Why should you even bother?
Oh, I'm Danny Clover, police.
Oh, hi, I'm Ben Taylor. Got a U-drive down the street. Only Mrs. Mason here, different. Kind of a take drive.
Oh, I see. Just today?
Oh, no, all the time. From 1 to 3, the element's willing. I take her for a ride. Sometimes here, sometimes there.
Ride?
Sure. Right away, Miss Mason. See you, Danny.
Wait a minute. How long have you been doing this, Ben?
Ride?
Oh, since her accident. Since at Coney last year. Hurt her back here and up here, her head.
Ride. Car, ride.
I guess I better take her. I heard her cry like that before. I can't stand it.
Sure. It's a nice day, Mrs. Mason. I hope you enjoy your ride.
Oh, she will. She likes riding in a car. See you around, Danny.
I watched Ben lift her gently out of the wheelchair, lift her into the back of the car, close the door, fold the chair, place it in the car trunk. Then back and saying something to her. She looked up for an instant. Her eyes found me. Then she smiled and shaped a lost word with her lips. They were gone. And back at headquarters, the wall clock ticking off the hours of Harry Foster's death, ticking off the hours that his murderer came to a park bench, looked at it, smiled, walked away in the warm sun, ticked off the question of why money had been left there for Harry Foster to find week after week on Friday's twilight. And at 4 o'clock, the door opening slightly, and all you saw of the man was his cocked head.
You Mr. Danny Clover?
That's right. You want something?
Only to know of you, Mr. Danny Clover, and to give you what I have in my pocket. They said I should give it to you, you being the interested party and all.
What have you got in your pocket?
This, an envelope, stamped and everything. I found it.
Give it to me. It's addressed to George Mason.
Anybody can see that. That's the husband of that woman, the cripple, the one they call a looker in the papers, the one they think they saw that stabbing. I did right bringing it to you, huh?
It's been opened. You open it? Don't lie to me. You opened it and then resealed it.
All right, I opened it. I'm a normal kind of fella with all the normal curiosities. First, I was going to mail it when I found it. But then I saw who was addressed to. I couldn't restrain myself. I'm like the proverbial cat, Mr. Clover.
It could make trouble for you being like that.
Not when you see what's in it. Not when you see what it says. It says, you've made a terrible mistake. That's all. Not another word. See? You can't do anything to me for just reading that. You just read it yourself. That's why I brought it to you. Because I'm a cooperative citizen.
Where'd you find it?
At Grant's tomb. You know, I've been curious about that tomb for years now. Finally, I took time off to go to study it. Then I found a letter on the steps. And I never did get to really study Grant's tomb.
Tough. You'll stick around, huh? Some of our boys want to have a long chat with you. They enjoy curious fellas.
Sure, anything you say. I'm nothing if I'm not cooperative. Just nothing.
I wouldn't say that, but you stick around, huh? Hi, Ben.
Well, hello, Danny. Hey, how do you like this, huh? I rigged up so when it's a sunny day, the telephone is on the outside of my shack. Inspiration, huh?
Fine.
Who wants to be on the inside when outside it's sunny? You car renting, Danny? I can give you rates.
Just talk.
If you don't do business together, we never become enemies, huh? What's on your mind?
Mrs. Mason.
Ah, yeah. Sad, huh? You know, if you set your mind to it and consider all she's been through, and then look at her, she's a pretty woman.
I noticed. You said she was hurt in an accident at Coney Island, Ben. What kind of an accident?
On a roller coaster. You know, one of them rides. Fell off right near the end of the ride. She stood up, fell.
Was she with anyone?
Yeah, her husband. You want to know something? In spite of the heartbreak of having a wife like that, you know, Mr. Mason is one of the nicest guys I ever met.
What about Mrs. Mason, Ben?
What about her?
Can anyone ever talk to her, have a conversation with her?
I talk to her.
About what?
Things. You know, ain't it a pretty day, Mrs. Mason? Is there a draft on you, Mrs. Mason? I talk to her, but she just hums and sings. But you know, I think she's getting better. Maybe I'm contributing.
Where'd you go driving today?
Down Riverside Drive. You know, the river, Grant's tomb, the churches.
Thanks a lot, Ben.
Anytime, Danny, anytime at all.
Oh, hello, Mr. Clover.
Good evening, Mr. Mason.
We're delighted to see you. Please come in. Diane, it's Mr. Clover. Diane looks better, doesn't she, Mr. Clover?
Yes, yes, she does. I brought you something, Mr. Mason. Here.
Huh? A letter?
It's addressed to you. Read it.
I don't understand.
Read it.
Yes, it is. It's addressed to me, but it's been opened.
That's right. Read it.
All right.
No. Note says you made a mistake, Mr. Mason. Mrs. Mason, your husband might be electrocuted for a murder he committed.
Leave her alone.
I wasn't going to touch her. Cut it out, Mrs. Mason.
What's the matter with you? Have you gone out of your mind, Clover?
I said cut it out, Mrs. Mason.
I told you, leave her alone. All right, you've come here to accuse me of murder, but leave her alone.
George.
Don't worry about anything, dear.
Get me a drink of water.
What? What did you say?
A drink of water, George. Cold water from the refrigerator.
Diane.
Darling, a drink of water. Do it. You won't be able to wait on me anymore. Mr. Clover's going to take you away from me.
You're talking like you know what you're saying. You do know what you're saying. What's happening? What's happening to us?
It's already happened. It's all over.
Poor George.
It paid off, didn't it, Mrs. Mason? Sitting at the window, watching for a man your husband could kill.
Simple little man. He came and sat on the same bench every Friday. He got paid for a while.
It was you. You wrote that first letter to Diane. And this one. Made me pay blackmail to a man who didn't even know me, didn't know anything about me.
It was so simple. Write a letter, put a stamp on it, drop it from the car. Someone picked up the first letter and mailed it.
About 5 weeks ago, a letter with instructions in it.
Why, yes.
Leave money every Friday on the park bench. And the man who picked it up, Mr. Mason, you thought was a blackmailer, so you killed him.
She's crazy. She really is. She's crazy.
No, I'm not. I'm just a cripple, George. I can't move from this chair. Honest. But I'm not crazy.
She's crazy.
What did that first letter say, Mr. Mason?
Well, that a man saw me push my wife off a ride at Coney Island. He demanded blackmail, but I didn't push, Diane.
Then why did you pay the money, darling?
But you weren't going to let your husband alone, were you, Mrs. Mason? Even after he did what you wanted him to do, murder a man. Another letter that one your husband's holding, telling him he killed the wrong man.
It's not much to ask, is it? Wanting George to suffer? Look at me.
You're an accessory, Mrs. Mason.
Am I? What can you do to me? A cripple in a wheelchair. In a prison? Would that be different? Tell me how.
I didn't push you, Diane. I didn't push you. You fell off that ride. You fell.
Liar.
Diane.
You're a liar,
Diane,
George.
Diane, will you listen to me? I made it up to you. I carried you. I waited on you. I went crazy that day. I hated you. I don't know why. I don't know. Oh, I know why. You're an evil woman. Evil.
Poor George.
You should have died. You should have. You should have.
Poor George. Poor.
You should have died.
It's night on Broadway now. There's easy laughter, and a trumpet skirls its music into the grinning mob. It's top of the evening. Have another drink on me, kid, and let's sit this dance out. It's a street gouged out of a scarlet dream. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway, my beat.
Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis, with musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Lamont Johnson was heard as George Mason, Kathy Lewis as Diane Mason, and Virginia Gregg as Mrs. Foster. Others in the cast were Herb Vigran, Lou Krugman, and Johnny McGovern. Joe Walter speaking. This is CBS, where you laugh at Jack Benny every Sunday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's a terrific episode of Broadway Is My Beat, the Harry Foster case, starring Larry Thor, along with Charles Calvert. Elliot Lewis did the producing and directing on that. Elliot Lewis was a tremendous producer-director. He was married to Kathy Lewis, the actress. And he was a producer-director on Suspense for a while. He was also Frankie Remley on the Phil Harris and Alice Faye Show. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Lisa, wake up.
Me? Are you kidding me?
You see her sleeping there in the corner?
I don't think
so. When the news was on,
so.
She was sleeping.
If anybody's sleeping, it's never me. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, come on, this is our radio show.
I get
wake
a rush
up.
Here. You're
wake
the,
up.
You're the one that gets sleepy.
We have classic radio shows to present.
I'm a nighttime gal. You're a morning kind of a guy.
Yeah,
right?
You sleep till what? I'm.
Well, I go to bed late, and then I try to make up for it in the morning when I can, when I'm not working.
I'm usually up till about midnight.
Well, that's
on
late.
Monday through Friday.
Me too.
Midnight, that's not that late.
It's pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to watch my Netflix.
It's late.
It's late.
It's a tad late. It's not like super, it's not that late, but
right.
It's a tad late.
It's not like,
Well, it depends what time you have to get up the next day. It depends what's going on.
But what do I got going on?
I don't know. What do you got going on?
Nothing.
Okay, well, then it's good.
No, I got some stuff going on.
I know you do.
You know, just a few things.
I know.
So we're tuning in to Classic Radio every Saturday and Sunday. Make sure you mark your calendar for that. We play 6 different Classic Radio shows each and every weekend here on this legendary station, Radio 720 WGN, reaching about 40 states at night, plus parts of Canada. So hello across the country. Hope you're enjoying these radio shows that aired back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and which was really the way people were entertained back then. I mean, yeah, they had newspapers and they had the movie theaters, but radio was free. They all had a radio in their home. They had multiple radios. They had radios in their car. And so why not listen to these radio dramas like The Shadow and Jack Benny and Burns and Allen and all that? And we have an episode of Dimension X. I told you we're going to rocket you off into outer space, Lisa.
That sounds great.
It's coming up here. Dimension X in this hour, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Better Late Than Never, a reality travel show which features 4 men traveling across Asia.
I hear this is a really good show.
I know we talked a little bit about this show with Dave Pleyer last night.
Yeah, all right.
And
so,
if you get it right,
yep,
you will win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
Number to call, 312-981-7200. Now, there's a bunch of guys on this show, so you have to identify
This guy
from this clip. You will hear him here from Happy Days.
There are 2 kinds of people, cool and nerds, and the people down in Arnold's are nerds.
All right. So who is that actor? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this short.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
There are 2 kinds of people, cool and nerds, and the people down in Arnold's are nerds.
And we've got Dennis on the line from Elgin. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you this morning?
Good, good. It is morning, isn't it? Yeah. It's feeling later and later. Dennis, who is this cool guy in that clip?
The cool one's Henry Winkler.
That is correct. And you are a winner. I mean, we can never forget the Fonz. That is truly a legend, and that character will always be remembered. There's no question. So, Dennis, thank you for calling in,
thank
and you.
You
are a winner, and you've won a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, and you can check them out at loumalnatis.com and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Thank you again. We hope you have a great pizza on us.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Take care.
Thanks,
Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. Yeah, Henry Winkler is the correct answer. He was the Fonz, and he's on this new reality show,
yes,
along with William Shatner and some other guys.
Big actors.
Yeah, it looks really, really good. Check it out. I think it's on NBC. So, all right, very good. It's time now to rocket Lisa off into the future. Let's get you in your
spacesuit.
Into your spacesuit. Put your helmet on here. Okay, here we go. Put your gloves on. All right, step into the spacecraft here, Lisa. Okay, good. Let's buckle her in here and rocket off. All right, I get to do the show by myself now. She's off to Pluto. And you're going to say hi to Mickey and to Minnie and everybody else when you get to Pluto, right?
Whatever you say.
All right. So Dimension X, as I said, was radio's premier series of adult science fiction. It premiered on radio in 1950, and it had stories by the greatest authors of the medium. You know, you had George Lefferts, Ernest Canoy, you had Ray Bradbury, Isaac Asimov, Frederick Brown, Robert Heinlein. These were all stories dramatized on Dimension X. Norman Rose, who was later the voice of Juan Valdez, the fictitious coffee grower in the Colombian coffee TV commercials, was Dimension X's host. You'll hear him at the very beginning, a deep voice on him. Let's tune this in. Let's go back to April 29th, 1950 for No Contact. Here's part 1 of Dimension X.
Adventures in Time and Space. Transcribed in future tense.
Dimension X.
Can you predict what will come in 100 years, or in 10, or in the next minute? Some people think they can. Nuclear scientists, mathematicians, astronomers, biologists. They'll predict the shape of the future. Why? Because they make the future. Because they see beyond the known dimensions of time and space into the unknown. Dimension X. It was in the year of 1982 that spacemen first discovered the Great Galactic Barrier. In the past 10 years, rocket travel to the moon and the nearer planets had become commonplace. And then men fixed their sights on a more distant star, the remote planet known as Volta. 5 exploratory ships went out, and none came back, each in turn disappearing mysteriously at the same vanishing point, at an invisible wall somewhere in the vast outer reaches that became known as the wrecker of spaceships, the Galactic Reef. And yet the explorers refused to admit defeat. It was on June the 2nd, 1987, that the rocket Star Cloud made ready for takeoff, the 6th to attempt to crack the barrier and win through to Volta.
Now hear this. Condition green. Captain,
I don't suppose you'd want the ship's doctor up here on the bridge during blast off.
I think not, Smitty.
All right, then. I'll be in the sick bay counting vitamin pills if you need me. Good luck, Lewis.
Thank you, Smitty.
Lieutenant Collier.
Yes, sir.
You're relieved. You better get down to navigation control and take over.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Lieutenant.
Yes, sir.
we've never flown together before. This is your first flight in a space vessel as big as the Star Cloud, isn't it?
Yes, sir. But I was trained in oversized jobs at the Naval Academy.
Well, if you're half as good a navigator as your father was, you'll do fine.
Thank you, sir. You were old shipmates, weren't you?
Old shipmates? I served under them in the first rocket that ever got back to its base in one piece. We flew that mission in a tin can not much better than a primitive guided missile. I almost went along on the last trip your father made to the barrier. Too bad about that.
Yes, sir.
Now, that's all, Collier. I'll bus you when you get down to nav control. Lieutenant Paulson.
Yes, sir.
Get me ground control tower on the radio. I want to talk to Colonel Harrison.
Sparks has the circuit up now, Captain. Go ahead, sir. I patched in our bridge speaker.
Colonel Harrison.
Yes, Captain.
We're standing by for takeoff in 60 seconds.
Good. The field is cleared of all personnel. We'll try to reestablish radio contact immediately after takeoff. In any event, there'll be a 24-hour ground monitor.
Fine.
Good luck. I hope you make it.
Thank you. Bridge to navigation control.
Nav control, Collier.
Ready, Lieutenant?
We're ready, Captain. The course is in the integrator for takeoff at 1,200 hours.
All right. Stand by for blastoff. Bridge to engine room. Fire up your rocket chambers. Take off at exactly 1,200 hours. I'll read you off. 20 seconds. 19, 18, 17... 16.
Condition red.
Hold it, please. No color orders. Who turned in that alarm?
We uncovered a stowaway, sir.
Stowaway? Where, Masters?
Hiding in 6 Bay. Dr. Smithson found him.
Have him brought up to the bridge. Engine room, kill your rockets and stand by.
Person, this is Colonel Harrison in ground control. What's holding you up?
Trouble.
What's the matter with you?
What's the matter with you? There's a stowaway aboard.
Stowaway?
Yes, I thought your men were supposed to police this base. What's the matter with
you? All right, Captain, take it easy.
You know what this delay can do to us, don't you? 1 minute later, takeoff can throw us a million miles off course. We'll have to reintegrate the whole works.
Well, look, how long do you think it'll take?
Don't bother me for a while. I'm busy. Stupid idiot.
Captain Thorson.
Oh, come in, Smitty.
Here's your stowaway.
I'll court-martial the... Charlie.
Can you use a good radio man, Skipper?
I see you two have met.
Met? The Skipper and me made 50 trips to the moon together. Didn't we, Captain?
Charlie, if you wanted to come along, why didn't you volunteer?
I did, Skipper. They turned me down.
What's wrong with you?
Acceleration bends.
Oh.
They said my arteries wouldn't stand another trip.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
But they're wrong, sir. I got one more good trip in me. Now, listen, Captain. You know these green kids don't know the first thing about space radio operation. You put a man like me on, I'll be getting you a bedtime story for Mars.
Now, listen, Charlie, you know the regulations as well as I do. I can't take you much as I'd like to.
Colonel Harrison will murder me for this.
Oh, I'm sorry, Charlie. I'll have to put you aground. I'll tell you what. I'll ask Harrison to put you on his ground radio contact. It'll seem as if you were right here with us.
He won't do it, sir.
He'd better, or I'll have him busted to corporal for letting you sneak aboard. Now, you'd better be off, Charlie. Masters.
Yes, sir.
I'm sending this man aground. Give him time to clear the launching platform.
Yes, sir.
So long, Charlie. I'm really sorry.
Good luck, Skipper.
I thought you were going to have him drawn and quartered.
Been anybody else, I would have, Smitty. But Charlie, well, he's kind of special. Been with me since my first command, when we began the regular run to the moon. If he wanted to come along this time, well, it's only through loyalty to me.
You know, Lewis, I didn't realize it before, but you're almost human.
Bilge. Navigation, Lieutenant Collier, you there?
Nav control, Collier.
Lieutenant, how badly are we fouled up? Can you recalculate the course, or shall I cancel the takeoff?
I've already plotted a new course on the integrator, sir.
Good.
Can we take off in exactly 2 minutes?
2 minutes?
Yes, sir. If we can, all we need to correct is for only a 1 degree deflection. I can do that before we breach the stratosphere.
That's quick work. Are you sure?
Positive, sir.
Well, all right, Collier. I'm putting it in your hands. We'll blast off on your signal.
Lewis, isn't that a lot of responsibility for a young green officer?
Yes, but if he can't do his job, I'd rather find out now than at the galactic barrier. Bridge to engine room. Prepare to blast off on navigator signal. How are we doing, Collier?
Coming on the bearing, sir. 4, 3, 2, 0. We've intersected the course vector.
Good work, Collier.
The course is corrected, sir. Ready to go into atomic overdrive anytime you say.
All right, stand by.
Now hear this. Prepare for maximum acceleration.
Bridge to engine room. Kill your rockets.
Rockets out.
Fire up number one cyclotron.
Number one ready.
Fire up number two.
Number two ready.
Withdraw your dampening rods.
Aye. Fission chamber ready. Blast tubes cleared. All generators operating at capacity, sir.
Right. Go into overdrive on the count of zero.
5 seconds, Captain.
3, 2. Two.
One.
One.
Zero.
Zero. How are we doing, Collier?
On course, sir. She's running hot and true.
Well, my compliments, Lieutenant.
Thank you, sir.
This job would have done your father credit. He was one of the best navigation officers I ever saw.
Thanks, sir.
Now start your gyros and put her on robot control. The bridge is yours, Mr. Collier. If you need me, I'll be in Dr. Smithson's office.
Yes, sir. Us off the ground.
Yeah, you can thank young Collier for that. Chip off the old block.
You knew his father?
Matter of fact, I knew him very well. First-rate spaceman.
Is he the one who...
Yes. He was lost in the galactic barrier on the second ship we sent out to Volta.
Lewis, just what do you think this galactic barrier is?
Well, your guess is as good as mine, Doc. All I know is that 5 ships have gone into it. None of them have come back out.
How about Miss Trubik's theory that it's a time warp in space, that the ships reach it and slip into another dimension?
Rubbish. My theory is that the galactic barrier is nothing more than a radioactive layer of some kind.
What makes you say that?
Well, we know that radar signals bounce off it like they were hitting an invisible glass wall. And we know that it destroys our ships and crews in some way. So there's no other logical explanation.
What makes you think we can get through it, Lewis?
Because we're ready for it. The others weren't. The entire hull is completely shielded with lead. We can crack through any radioactive cloud ever detected. Besides, we're equipped with some new UHF radio devices that should enable us to maintain radio contact with Earth. Nothing can happen. Absolutely nothing.
Who are you trying to convince?
Myself, I suppose.
Lewis, you've had your share of glory. First skipper to reach the moon back in 1962. You could have retired. Why are you risking this trip?
Because 5 ships are missing. and men like Prentice and Marketson and young Collier's father. I'm tired of seeing good men fed into that meat chopper.
Then why are we going?
We haven't any choice, Smitty. We're in a race, the kind of race where men and ships are expendable. According to Interspace Code, the first nation to reach Volta can claim it.
Personally, I want no part of it.
Doc, there are a dozen nations who feel very differently about that.
I know. You're right, of course. Well, at least it won't be boring. I'll have to play physician morale builder and mother substitute for 112 slightly nervous men.
Your morale doesn't sound too good, Doc.
As morale officer, I can state without fear of contradiction, it is terrible. And something tells me that as we approach that galactic barrier, I'm not going to be alone.
Hello, Earth. Hello, Earth. Captain Thorson of the Star Cloud calling Earth. Star Cloud to Earth. Can you read me?
Hello, Star Cloud. Hi, Captain.
Charlie. Well, I see they haven't court-martialed you yet.
No, sir. Thanks to you.
That's good to hear you. You can read us the funny papers on Sunday morning.
Right.
How's our signal?
Strong. Clear as a bell.
Well, here's our log report for Colonel Harrison. Ready?
Shoot.
June 2nd, 1987. 4 weeks out from Earth. Running true, no radiation. Operation normal. Still making our approach to the galactic barrier. That's all, Charlie. See you later.
Good luck, Captain. I sure wish I was with you.
How's the morale, Smitty?
Well, the men know we're getting closer to the barrier. They're beginning to show a little tension, Lewis.
How's their physical condition? Any sickness?
About half the crew has come down with space blues.
I was afraid of that. Bad?
Oh, same as usual. Lips and hands with a bluish cast. Eyes are sensitive to infrareds.
I don't know. When I first started flying these tin cans, nobody ever heard of space blues.
There's a theory it's caused by the terrific acceleration of the atomic overdrive.
Mm.
The change in gravity affects the circulation.
And what do you think?
Oh, I think it's psychosomatic. I've noticed that the same men who get space blues under tension on a ship tend to get blue coloration back on Earth when they're upset. I guess it's an occupational disease of space navigators.
You think it's just nerves, then?
I don't know. Young Collier's got a bad case. Yes, I think it's tension from overwork.
Yeah. Maybe he needs some vitamins.
Lewis, when will you realize that vitamins are not a panacea for all the troubles of mankind?
How's that flight going, Lisa? You're almost to Pluto yet?
Oh, I'm there already. Yeah. There and beyond.
Sound good. The walkie-talkies working pretty,
the walkie-talkies
pretty
are
good
great.
From Pluto to Chicago here. That's the first portion of Dimension X with No Contact, as heard on NBC from April 29th, 1950. We'll get back to that in just a few moments. First, these words.
The Cubs Conversation.
I think it's comical sometimes, to be honest with you, when people say they're nervous. I mean, what are you nervous about? It's just a good time to just really put all your chips in and get on board, 100% behind it, because it means something when you have everybody behind you, especially down the stretch and getting into the playoffs. This is going to happen. Nothing bad is going to happen. Good things are going to happen. These guys believe good things are going to happen and kind of have that approach. I think it'll pay huge dividends.
Ryan Dempster, Thursday mornings at 8:40 with Steve. The Cubs Conversation every day on the station with the Cubs in our DNA. 720 WGN.
Want to remind you, we have a Facebook page for this radio show. It's WGN Radio Theater. Please like us. We want to build our likes, and that's a great place to let us know what you would want to hear here on the WGN Radio Theater every Saturday and Sunday night, 11 p.m. till 2 o'clock in the morning. My team is Lisa Wolf, Elif Garris, and also Mike Gastella. And just let us know what you want to hear. We'll be happy to play it for you. We usually schedule these a few months out, right? If you go to our Facebook page or our website is WGN Radio Theater. You'll see our schedule, And like next week, let's see, what do we have next week? Oh, your uncle, Nero.
My uncle Nero is on.
The New Adventures of Nero Wolf. What else do we have, Lisa?
We've got My Favorite Husband. That's my personal favorite. We've got Duffy's Tavern. We've got Rocky Jordan, Mr. and Mrs. North, and Tales of the Texas Rangers.
Somebody just asked us for a text, Tales of the Texas Rangers. See, we probably have a little ESP. Yeah, here's my era. This is it, Lisa. Were you a disco girl?
I don't know. What do you mean by disco girl?
Let me ask you this. Did you go to, like, roller skating a lot? Did you like
to
do the roller skating?
Yeah, I went. There was a roller skating rink that I used to go to next to Hackney's on, what was it, Milwaukee?
How about you, Elif? Did you roller skate as a kid?
In the 70s, yeah.
In the 70s.
we
really
probably
did.
Saw you there.
I rollerbladed a lot.
Oh, can you rollerblade or roller skate backwards?
No.
Oh, okay. What about you, Lisa?
I do everything backwards, girl.
Really? Yeah, you know, there was a roller skating rink when I was growing up. And it was like,
what was
that
it
was
called?
I don't remember, but that was the place to go and meet girls.
Do you know that I had my sweet 16 at roller skating? We had Hackney's for lunch and then we went roller skating.
Hackney's. What's Hackney's? I've heard of that.
Hackney's on North.
What is Hackney's?
It's like hamburgers kind of a place.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like an Irish pub kind of place. I don't know.
I always injured myself roller skating. It's like my friends would be like, let's go roller skating. I would think, that's an injury, but I'll go because I want to meet girls. But I would leave there injured generally.
What were you going to say, Ella?
Is it Fleetwood Roller Rink?
No. Mm. That's not it. I don't think it's there anymore.
I went to the Galaxy Roller Rink.
I can't think
growing
of it.
Up. Galaxy Roller Rink.
Somebody else.
Maybe
knows
that's still around. I don't know
about.
The Galaxy. Speaking of sci-fi, Galaxy is where I used to go.
Yeah, I definitely didn't go there.
And then
I can't think of it now.
But were you a disco girl? Did you go disco dancing every weekend with your girlfriends?
No.
Not really?
Not really.
Why?
I don't know.
That's not what I did. Me and Vince Lombardi, man, my buddy Vince Lombardi, we went to stay out discotheque, and that was the thing to do on Saturday. We would spend we'd spend like 11 hours getting ready, and then we go there for about 3 hours.
The Axel, is that it?
Yeah, Axel.
The Axel.
The Axel. Mm-hmm. I went there.
Yeah,
We met each other there. I went to the Axel.
Anything's possible.
Maybe.
Could you imagine?
Lisa.
I don't think we would have gotten along back then.
No, we don't get along now, so why would we?
I don't know why. Because the more I know about you, the less I think that we would have gotten along back then.
Oh, thanks. That's a vote of encouragement,
let me tell you. No. I didn't mean that in a bad way.
Oh, really? Yeah, I wouldn't like you. I didn't mean that in a bad way at all.
I was shyer then.
Yes.
I was shy.
You were shy.
I was. I mean that. I was shy.
You wouldn't have roller skated if I would have went up to you and said, hey, Lisa, want to roller skate with me? You'd be like, no.
No, I probably would have.
Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's roller skate on Pluto. I'll meet you on Pluto and we'll roller skate together.
Okay.
Let's go back, tune into the conclusion of this now. No Contact on Dimension X.
Sir, I understand you've relieved me from duty.
Dr. Smithson says you aren't looking very well, Collier. I'm just giving you a rest.
But, sir, I feel perfectly able to continue.
Your lips were as blue as Minnetonka.
Captain, I'd like to remain at my post.
Don't be so foolhardy, Lieutenant.
I'm not being foolhardy, sir. You see, I have a special personal reason for wanting this expedition to reach Volta.
Your father?
Yes, sir, my father.
You think he might still be alive? Hmm?
Sir, I have to find out what happened.
I think I understand. Very well, Collier. Report back to duty. What's the reading, Paul?
We're getting a +5 radar bounce now, sir. Coming off the barrier almost as fast as we send it out.
What's the interval?
0.3 seconds. Shortening steadily. This rate will hit the wall in the next few minutes.
All right. Alert the crew.
Sound general quarters.
Now hear this. Condition red. We are now approaching the galactic barrier. All hands to stations. All radiation detectors to be fully manned. Full security will prevail until further notice. That is all.
Wallison.
Aye, sir.
Radar bounce is up to plus six. We better try to make final contact with Earth. Is Sparks still trying to raise the base?
Yes, sir, but he's not having much luck. Seems to be some interference. Well, that's the radio room now. Yes? You've got him? Well, cut in on the bridge speaker. The captain will take it from here.
Hello, Star Cloud to Earth. Can you hear me, Earth?
Hello, Skipper. I can barely read you. We're getting heavy static from sunspots.
That's not sunspots. We're right on the galactic barrier. Getting a plus seven radar bounce. Expect to hit the barrier almost any second now.
Good luck, Skipper.
Look, Charlie, stick with us, will you? We're switching to the automatic center now so you can track us in.
Okay.
If we crack the barrier and come through still in one piece, I'll try to get back to you on the high-frequency band.
Gotcha, Skipper. Don't worry. I'll be waiting.
So long, Charlie.
So long, Star Cloud.
We must be getting awfully close now, Captain. Echo's bouncing back so fast, it's almost beating the signal.
Well, when they coincide, hold on to your hat. That's when we run into the wall.
Any second.
Hold on.
Here goes nothing.
Here it comes.
It, Captain.
No radiation, no time warp, no nothing. The crew's gone crazy, sir.
Let them, they earned it. Hey, Doc, can you break out a few bottles of snake bite serum for medicinal purposes?
I sure can, Louis.
This calls for a celebration. How's your morale now?
Couldn't be better. How's your...
Couldn't be better. Hey, what the...
Condition red. Condition red. Radiation detected. Condition red. Radiation detected.
Holy mackerel. Look at the needle on that indicator.
Wallison, Wallison.
I see it, Captain. Picking up radiation like crazy.
What's it like?
It's a strong impulse.
What kind?
I don't know, sir. It's too long for a cosmic ray and too short for UHF. The ship's lousy with it.
Man your battle stations!
Apollison, track it down. Triangulate and make it fast. I want a directional fifth.
Yes, sir.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
We're picking up radioactivity. Is it the fission chambers?
No leak here, sir.
I'll check your gauges.
Nothing here, Captain. Must be coming from outside.
Damage control.
Yes, sir.
Is radiation penetrating the lead shield?
Haven't found anything yet, sir.
Well, keep at it. Paulison, how are you doing?
I've got a fix, Captain.
Now, what is it?
I'll have to recheck my figures.
Now, hurry up.
The angle is correct.
Come on, man, for Pete's sake. What's the radiation from?
It's coming from inside the ship.
That's impossible.
Oh, sir, I've checked it twice.
Well, it's got to be the engines.
If it is, we're finished.
Engine room.
Yes, sir.
That radiation must be in the overdrive pile.
No, sir. It isn't here, sir.
Are you certain?
Yes, sir.
All right, keep checking. Well, only one thing left to do. Paulison, get a Geiger counter. We're going to start combing this ship inch by inch.
Yes, sir.
Now turn it on.
Yes, sir. Ready, Captain.
We'll check the atomic guns first. Come on. We'll cut through the officer's quarters to ordnance.
Yes, sir.
Here.
Wait a minute, sir.
Huh? What is it?
Signal's weaker now.
Yeah. Let's go back. Hold it, hold it. Seems strongest right about here.
Doesn't make sense.
Whose cabin is this?
Lieutenant Collier's.
Collier!
Oh, he's down in nav control, sir.
Well, drive the door.
It's not locked, sir. This is in here, all right. Listen to that counter. It's strongest over here.
Open that wall cabinet.
It's locked, sir.
I'll smash it. Shut off the Geiger counter. Well, what do you make of this, Paulison?
Well, it looks like some sort of portable transmitter, sir. Must be foreign manufacture. I don't recognize the calibration symbols at all. I've never seen anything like it.
Which raises a small question. What is Lieutenant Collier doing with a transmitter in his cabin?
I don't know, sir.
Well, I intend to find out, Paulison. Get down to nav control and bring Collier up to the bridge on the double.
Well, hadn't we better find some way to shut this thing off first?
I know a way.
Lieutenant Collier.
Lieutenant Collier, I'm going to ask a few simple questions.
Yes, sir.
And I want a few simple answers.
Yes, sir.
What were you doing with the transmitter in your cabin?
Transmitter, Captain.
You know nothing about it?
No, sir, I don't.
Do you recognize these calibration symbols?
No, sir.
Can you think of how it might have been placed in your cabin without your knowing it?
No, sir, unless someone came in while I was on duty.
Well, would that have been possible?
Well, I suppose so. Well, if someone had a key.
I found your cabin door unlocked.
I meant a key to the wall cabinet.
I didn't say the wall cabinet.
Oh, well, you, sir, I...
You what, Lieutenant? How could you have known it was in the wall cabinet?
Well, I just assumed.
Lieutenant Collier, I find it hard to believe you would lie. Having known and respected your father and having observed the way you handled your job. However, I intend to get to the root of this thing. May I have your wristwatch, Lieutenant?
Sir?
Your wristwatch.
Here you are, sir.
Follison, turn on that Geiger counter.
Yes, sir.
And hold this watch next to it.
Yes, sir.
That's all. Lieutenant, if you hadn't any close contact with that transmitter, how do you explain the radioactivity of this watch?
Well, I don't, sir.
I think you'd better. To whom were you sending those signals?
Condition red. Condition red.
There's your answer, Captain.
What is this, Collier?
Alien spaceship approaching. Alien spaceship approaching.
Collier, who's aboard that ship? All right, now talk.
Very well, Captain. My mission seems completed.
Your mission? Are you admitting that you're an agent of a foreign power?
I am stating it.
What nation?
No nation, Captain.
What?
I am an agent of the Voltan government.
The what?
The government of the planet of Voltan.
Are you crazy?
Are you so stupid that you think your people are the only ones who can invade another planet?
Lieutenant, what do you mean?
We've had agents operating on Earth since 1945.
I don't believe you.
What do you think happened to those five ships, Captain? Where do you suppose we got our information?
Well,
your language, your culture, family background.
Your appearance, you look like...
Like Commander Collier? Is that so surprising, Captain? We had a living model.
I ought to kill you.
That would be very foolish, Captain. I would advise you to surrender without delay.
Alien ship now coming in ordnance range.
I'll deal with you later, Collier. Paulison.
Yes, sir.
Put this man in irons and take him away.
Don't worry, sir. We'll take good care of him.
Partner, Robinson!
Gunnery.
Gunnery, Richardson.
What's the range?
10,000 meters. They're closing fast.
What's your guns on radar tracking?
Tracking. Coming on the bearing.
Fire. Fire, Richardson. Did you hear me? Fire! What's the matter down there? Did you hear me? Richardson, answer me! What? Who?
It's no use to shout, Captain.
Collier, how did you get loose? Where's Paulison?
Lieutenant Paulison is dead.
All stations, Lieutenant Collier has escaped. Seize him, men!
Don't waste your breath, Captain. Your men can't hear you.
What?
Those still alive are my men.
You're lying.
No, Captain. Every ship that has ever left Earth was controlled by a Voltan crew.
That's impossible. Those were hand-picked men.
Hand-picked by us.
I don't believe you.
Then why not call for help?
Carpenter, Robinson, Haley, report. Carpenter! Robinson! Haley! Report.
You see, Captain, it is quite useless. The Star Cloud will be taken to Volta for, shall we say, further experimentation.
I see. Of course, there's one thing you haven't counted on.
And just what is that, Captain?
This... Are you in there, Lieutenant Carpenter? Well, they can't all be dead. There must be one alive. Smitty! Dr. Smithson! Smitty! Oh, Smitty, what have they done to you?
Lewis.
Those dirty... Don't talk.
I must lean closer. Not much time. Lewis, space blues.
Space blues? What is it, Smitty? What are you trying to tell me?
All men with space blues... Voltans.
Here, let me help you.
No, Lewis. Get message back to Earth. Voltan Fifth column. Watch out for space blues. Oh.
Smitty. Oh, Smitty.
Captain Thorson, you can't hide from us now. Come back to the bridge and surrender, or my men will come and get you.
Oh, yeah?
Captain Thorson, you can't come.
Hello. Star Cloud calling Earth. Please, God, let me through before it's too late. Hello, Star Cloud to Earth. Come in, please. Hello?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me, Charlie?
Skipper, is that you?
I'm getting my signal.
It's coming in a little louder now, Skip. Keep sending.
Thank God, Charlie. Now listen to me. Not much time. Get word to Colonel Harrison. Crew mutinied. Most of crew members Voltans.
What?
Voltans.
Spell that.
V-O-L-T.
Voltans?
That's right. They're from the planet Volta.
Skipper, are you all right? Don't mean it.
Of course I mean it. Now tell Harrison, posing as humans, you can detect them by space blues. You got that? Only Voltans get space blues. Charlie, can you hear me?
Space blue. I get you.
I think you, Charlie. I'm depending on you. Warn everybody.
Captain?
They've opened the door. Come on, Charlie. Tell Harrison.
Captain. Captain Thorson. Hello. Hello, Star Cloud. Come in.
What's the trouble, Sergeant?
I was just trying to raise the Star Cloud, Colonel.
Had any luck?
No, sir. No contact.
No contact?
No, sir.
Nearly an hour since they hit the galactic barrier. I don't understand why they haven't tried to get a message back.
No, sir. Neither do I.
All right. I'll take over for a while.
Yes. You do that. You go right ahead, sir.
Right. Oh, Charlie, you'd better go out and get yourself some coffee. You look a little blue around the gills.
You have just heard No Contact, an adventure in time, space, and the unknown. The world of
Dimension X.
Dimension X has presented No Contact, an original story written by George Lefferts from a storyline by Lefferts and Ernest Kinoy. Featured in the cast were Louis Van Ruten as Captain Thorson, Donald Bucher as Lieutenant Collier, and Cameron Prudhomme as Charlie. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman, engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Edward King. Stay tuned for the remarkable Quiz Kids on NBC.
All right, that is No Contact, starring Louis Van Ruten on Dimension X from April 29th, 1950, with Norman Rose. And I think there's a picture. We posted a picture of Norman Rose. He was the host, and he later was the voice of Juan Valdez on the coffee commercial, so check that out. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. We're here with Nick DiGilio. Hi, Nick. How are you, buddy?
All right. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
Good to see you. And, boy, it seems like it was less than a week ago I saw you, but it wasn't. It was a week
just
ago.
One week ago. Yeah.
And so what's on the show tonight?
We got, again, the movie reviews that we will be doing with Eric and Colin. My dad will call in and tell a joke. And also the BBC this week released a list of, according to them, the top 100 films of the 21st century so far. So the past 16 years. So I'm going to go through that list and then talk about some of my favorites from the past 16.
Where do you put Raging Bull on your list?
Well,
is it up there?
That's
pretty high up there?
That's 1980.
I know it was 80. Oh. It was 19. I think yeah. it was 1980 that
it was 1980. So it yeah. wasn't the 21st century.
No, I know. I was just asking.
Raging Bull's a great movie. It was one of my favorites.
Is it up in your what? Is it in your top 20? Would you say?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Of the Scorsese movies, Taxi Driver is my favorite.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, that's my favorite. That's the one that's way up on the list.
The pinnacle for the Scorsese movies, huh?
Yeah, that's my favorite of all.
You know,
them,
when
yeah.
you talk about Scorsese and you think about all the movies this guy's made, and he's one of the greatest directors of all time.
Yep.
The movie that, when I watch it, I don't think of Scorsese as the director is The Aviator.
Yeah, well, I love that movie.
Right? Oh,
I think
me too.
It's a great film.
Love it. But it's just not his, like, you don't think of, you could think of Spielberg as maybe the director of that,
yeah.
right?
Well, it's, I mean, it's weird because it's half a love letter to Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie that most people, don't think is like a very Scorsese-like movie is one of my favorites of his, and that's Hugo. Which which is the kids
that
movie
is a,
that he shot
is
in 3D.
Cool movie, yeah.
It's a great movie. And I think it's the best movie he made since Goodfellas.
Yeah.
But it's a very un-Scorsese-like
it is.
Movie, except that it's about the love and prep, the love of cinema.
Who's your favorite director of all
John
time?
John Carpenter.
Wow, John Carpenter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. And that is because you like...
when I saw Halloween, I was 13 years old. And,
right. What about The Thing?
Love it.
Yeah.
So
there was never a Carpenter film you didn't like?
The only Carpenter movie that I had some issue with was Vampires with James Woods. That's the only one that kind of left me, eh. But yeah. other than that, I like them to love them. Like, they range from good to phenomenal. And most of them are great. And I just, the thing that's amazing about Carpenter is that when his movies were first released, a lot of them tanked. And then 25 years later, people go, oh! Like you mentioned, The Thing almost ended his career.
Oh.
It almost ended his career.
See, I just think that's...
It's a great movie.